This is a live special report from AP Radio News, the inauguration of Barack Obama. Good day to you from the west front of the U.S. Capitol. I'm Mark Smith.
I, Barack Hussein Obama,
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear.
4 years ago on this spot, a 47-year-old Hawaiian-born American raised his hand and repeated the slightly hesitant words of Chief Justice John Roberts and became the first black American to assume this nation's presidency. And a page of history was turned. Today, the history book gets a new entry as Barack Hussein Obama begins a second term. He is on his way up here, up Pennsylvania Avenue in the presidential motorcade. He's 51 years old now, grayer, by his own account, dinged up a bit, because his first 4 years were, in a word, tumultuous. A struggling recovery, a bailout, a stimulus, a debt crisis, health care, and, oh, by the way, two wars and Osama bin Laden. Meantime, the partisan brawling he hoped to end with his first term has continued. His poll numbers have soared, plunged, and then clawed their way back. And in a long, brutal election campaign, he defeated a popular former Republican governor to win another 4 years in the White House. Which is why, in just about an hour, President Barack Obama will take the oath, that same oath from the same Chief Justice here in the shadow of the U.S. Capitol. So the stage is set, the red, white, and blue bunting is all tacked up, the crowd, hundreds of thousands of strong, is jamming the National Mall. You probably just heard them cheering the arrival of former President Bill Clinton here onto the west front of the U.S. Capitol. And meantime, joining me, as he did 4 years ago, to give us some historical perspective on these events is Professor Jeremy Mayer of George Mason University. Jeremy, welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be back.
And it is terrific to have you, Jeremy. We're going to talk to you a bit throughout the broadcast, not just history, but politics and sort of everything in between. Let's start, though, with the nature of this second term swearing in. Really, by almost any measure, it's a more subdued swearing-in than what we had 4 years
ago.
Well,
I like to compare the difference between a first and a second as the difference between a wedding and a fifth wedding anniversary. It is still historic that a president will be inaugurated, but as it is the same man, and it's not the first time an African-American has taken the oath of office, it is less historic than it was 4 years ago.
Okay, it is certainly less historic in those terms, but it is a huge party. People have been pouring into the nation's capital from all around the country. As I said at the outset, we are expecting hundreds of thousands along the mall. Authorities just spoke about something on the order of 700,000. But it's also worth remembering that this is actually just a reenactment. The official swearing-in, the one mandated in the Constitution for January 20th, took place yesterday.
Right, so Barack Obama will be the second man in U.S. history to be sworn in as president four times, as FDR did. But Obama's first time was a flub by the Chief Justice, so he was sworn in that day in 2009 a second time, and then this Sunday swearing-in, and then this reenactment today.
Right, and of course, FDR was elected four times, Barack Obama elected twice. As we said, 2 years ago, we had the two swearings in because of the make good that was done at the White House. And of course, this time it is because typically on a Sunday, there is no big inaugural ceremony that is taking place today. Although it is a holiday, it is at least a Monday, and there are some things that are open.
You know, I think it's also important to note that there could be history made today because of the speech. Last time the speech wasn't that good, the moment was historic. This time, if Barack Obama is going to make history, it has to be in this speech.
Okay, very good. That's Professor Jeremy Mayer of George Mason University, who will be with us throughout the broadcast. I'd like to turn now to correspondent Jerry Bodlander, who is standing by inside the Capitol. And Jerry, we've spoken about the mood of the crowd, still certainly enthusiastic. The weather is a bit warmer today than it was 4 years ago. I guess we're ultimately expecting to get up above 40 degrees. What have you been hearing from the folks who've been streaming into this very elaborately constructed West Front platform?
Well, as you might expect, Mark, everybody is excited. But it is a day for people of all political stripes to gather on the Mall and watch the inauguration of the president to a second term. There was, for starters, a trio of Obama supporters from right here in D.C.
We are so excited to be here. We've been here since 3 o'clock this morning. We are celebrating everything we need for President Obama. We are his women.
But there were also Americans who didn't vote for the president who were here. Vicky Lyons came from Lakewood, Colorado. She says she is extremely concerned about the nation's future, but she adds that attending an inauguration is like standing in the middle of history. And right off the bat, Mark, this morning, you could see the crowd was smaller than 4 years ago. That's not to say that 800,000 is a small crowd. There also wasn't the same electricity in the air. Still, we have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, very excited at the prospect of being part of today's inauguration, and many of them lined up before dawn to be part of the throng that is now on the Mall. Mark?
That is Jerry Bodlander, our congressional correspondent inside the Capitol. I am back outside on the press risers overlooking the presidential lectern on the west front of the U.S. Capitol. It's the side of the Capitol that's been used since President Reagan for these inaugural swearings-in. Back in Lincoln's day, of course, and all the previous ones that were done at the Capitol, it was over on the east front. It's a smaller park on that side, looking over the Supreme Court and the Library of Congress. This way, it's a grand vista looking out over the National Mall to the Washington Monument, and you can see barely the Lincoln Memorial down at the other end. Pretty much filled up all the way to the Washington Monument with people. Now, as we mentioned at the outset, 1.8 million people saw the first swearing-in of Barack Obama 4 years ago. That count was done by the National Park Service based on overhead cameras and also the helicopter shots and such. So they were actually able to sort of count the throngs. This time around, we're expecting hundreds of thousands, but we're not going to get anywhere near that. In the meantime, though, security is extremely intense. Of course, Washington, a town that takes that kind of thing seriously, hence the months of painstaking preparation behind today's festivities, locking down every rooftop and manhole. Let's get a rundown now on that operation and turn to AP's national security correspondent, Sagar Mirghani.
This is what's called a national special security event, which means the Secret Service is in the lead, heavily partnering with law enforcement colleagues on all levels, securing an event with not just the president and vice president, but also lawmakers, Supreme Court justices, the Joint Chiefs, and others sounds daunting. But David Beach, the special agent who heads the Secret Service's Washington field office, plays it down.
This event is really no bigger than what we do every day. We're responsible for the safety of individuals, and we take that responsibility very seriously.
But former FBI agent Peter Ahern says it's really not.
I would classify this as a Steven Spielberg production. I mean, this is a major, major event.
Secret Service spokesman Edwin Donovan says there are likely far fewer people here than on Inauguration Day 4 years ago, when things went pretty well from a security standpoint.
The estimates were 2 million people on the Mall. We didn't have any arrests. There were no security-related incidents.
There's the usual. Lots of officers with weapons, sharpshooters on roofs, and eyes on the crowd, watching people's reactions.
We have 42 partners here. Every law enforcement entity, every transportation entity, everybody that's got cameras, we're utilizing.
And what might they be looking for? Ahern, who was a top advisor to the Director of National Intelligence, says it can be tough to tell. The lone wolf is the biggest worry.
Whether they are motivated by some philosophical belief, you look, for example, something tied to a Al-Qaeda sympathizer, just as somebody that could be mentally unstable and has an axe to grind.
If the Secret Service is predicting what might happen today, Donovan isn't saying.
I can say we have a lot of people that are assessing a lot of information.
All the security is in place, and Ahern says for the people in charge,
you're holding your breath and just hoping you get through this without any major incident.
And, Mark, an end to what the Secret Service calls just another day.
That is AP National Security Correspondent Sagar Mirghani rounding up the security aspects to this big event in the nation's capital. We are standing by for the announcement that Vice President Biden and his family will be coming onto the inaugural platform. While we wait to do that, let's look a little bit further down the road. Obviously, after this inaugural ceremony, the president, the vice president, the other dignitaries go inside to have lunch with members of Congress. But after that, we have the inaugural parade. The president and his wife will take part in that. Not quite as big a parade, not as expansive as one as 4 years ago, but still, it's going to be plenty colorful. Let's talk about that now with AP Radio correspondent Sandy Kozel, who's standing by along the parade route. Sandy?
Mark, what's different is that it's a little warmer than it was for the inaugural parade 4 years ago, but not by much. So the thousands and thousands of people who've been lining the parade route along Pennsylvania Avenue for hours are all bundled up. Now, we have seen a parade of limousines carrying VIPs to you in the Capitol and the swearing-in ceremony. And a few hours after the ceremony and a lunch, President Obama will attend on Capitol Hill. We'll have the parade. It is shorter, a bit, more efficient time usage, organizers say. Plus, floats are a bit shorter so they can make the turns quicker. The theme of this year's parade, Mark, is Our People, Our Future. There will be 8 inaugural floats, 60 groups, including marching bands, mounted units, cultural organizations, units representing the armed forces, and all more than 8,800 people and close to 200 animals. Mark?
It's correspondent Sandy Kozel, who will get to shiver a little bit out there in the at the reviewing stand across from the White House and watching the parade later on today. A parade that is already forming up as the dignitaries begin to take their place here on the platform of the west front of the Capitol. You can just see that first daughters, Malia and Sasha Obama, have come down the stairs and are now in front awaiting the arrival of their father. Of course, Vice President Biden is going to get on the stage first. Let's talk briefly, if we can, also about what happens at the end of this day, the inaugural balls. You know, it is a night of a day of ceremony first, but then, of course, traditionally a night of dancing. Since well before Lincoln's day, inaugurals have been an occasion for merriment that the new president and his first lady join in. And as AP correspondent Ed Donahue tells us, this year's inaugural balls are as star-studded as we have come to expect.
A lot of the talent campaigned for the president.
I don't get it. I mean, I'm an old white guy, and I love Barack Obama.
That's James Taylor.
Oh, beautiful. For space is sky.
And this is the song he will be singing with Kelly Clarkson. Katy Perry campaigned for the president, too.
Baby, you're a firework. Come on,
she pushed people to forget the excuses and vote.
And then I'm too tired, or it doesn't really count, or I'm 65, or whatever.
Singing the national anthem at the inaugural ceremony. It's Beyonce. She sang this for the president and first lady 4 years ago at one of the balls. There were 6 inaugural balls then. There will be just 2 this year. One is the Commander-in-Chief's Ball for active duty servicemen and women, along with veterans. Admission is free. The other is the inaugural ball, open to the public as well as campaign volunteers. Other acts include Stevie Wonder, Usher, Alicia Keys, John Legend, and Smokey Robinson. Ed Donahue, Washington.
U.S. Capitol. I'm Mark Smith, along with Jeremy Mayer, professor of political science at George Mason University. We were talking earlier on about the difference in tone between the two. Let's talk briefly about the inaugural address that we're expecting to hear from President Obama, who I should mention has just arrived. His motorcade just pulled in around the other side of the Capitol. The president, we're told, is going to give a thematic speech. This is not a State of the Union speech, is it? It's not going to be a list of detailed policy prescriptions.
Well, the great inaugural speeches do inspire, and some of the worst speeches have set out very detailed policy plans. One of my questions is, how long will the man talk? Last time he talked about 2,400 words. That's almost as long as the recent longest speeches, which were the 2 Reagan inaugurals. If he talks for too brief, I think he's missing an opportunity to set the tone for his second term.
Okay, but this is more a tone setting, and we're going to hear, you know, calls for bipartisanship. He will talk about some of the policy things that he wants to do in his second term.
Yeah, a big question for me is, does he mention gun control? Because if he does, then he's really putting that issue, which is a hot button, right at the center of his second term. Does he mention immigration? Does he mention the fiscal cliff that we're now facing with the debt ceiling? And I think the other question that a lot of his supporters have is, which Barack Obama is going to give this speech? Is it the Barack Obama of the last 18 months, who's been much more combative with Republicans, or is it the first few years Obama, who kept reaching out and reaching out and reaching out to Republicans and making very little progress?
Once again, that's Professor Jeremy Mayer of George Mason University. The cheers you heard probably as we were just having that exchange were for Jill Biden, the vice president's wife. And now we're standing by as Vice President Biden is to be announced onto the inaugural platform on this chilly, as you can probably hear, breezy morning in the nation's capital. A crowd, as I was saying, that was streaming in well before sunup. We got here in the middle of the night, frankly, and the lines to the checkpoints where folks were coming into the second, the ticketed sections were still pretty long. And yet we are told this is not going to be quite as big a crowd as we had 4 years ago. From this vantage point, high atop the scaffolding overlooking that bunting-draped platform, it is hard to tell because there are people as far as the eye can see. Once again, expecting Vice President Biden to be announced onto the platform momentarily. And he is, of course, one of the last to be who will be entering. After that, the First Ladies will be announced on, and then the President announced onto the platform.
Another difference between this year and 4 years ago is that we don't have a defeated incumbent on the rostrum. Last time it was kind of a sad portrait of Dick Cheney and former President Bush up there looking rather sad. And this year, that sort of ghostly presence is not here.
Yeah, we do, of course, have former presidents. As I mentioned, President Bill Clinton is here. Former President Jimmy Carter, the other member of the President's Club.
The United States, Mrs. Michelle Obama, accompanied by Secretary of the Senate Nancy Erickson, Clerk of the House of Representatives Karen Haas, Mrs. Schumer, Mrs. Reed, and Mr. Pelosi.
And there is the First Lady walking down the steps of the west front of the U.S. Capitol. She has, of course, a new hairdo for the occasion. She's got bangs, something the President was noticing approvingly at a reception last night. She's exchanging hugs with members of Congress and other dignitaries as she makes her way down the platform. Smiling, frankly, just brilliantly as she looks at this crowd. What's not to like about this big a crowd? The White House tells us, by the way, that she is wearing a navy Tom Brown coat and dress, and a fabric that was developed, again, according to the White House, based on the style of a men's silk tie. Also, she's got a belt that comes from J. Crew, a designer that she is known to favor. Her daughters are standing off to her right. They're both wearing sort of pastel blue overcoats. Daughter Malia has got a muffler of some sort around her neck and is kind of bouncing up and down bouncing up and down to the music being played by the President's own Marine Band. Now that they are in place, I think we're sort of vamping until Vice President Biden and the President are ready to go.
Another difference is that last time we had John McCain, the defeated candidate here, and he's again here, but Mitt Romney, of course, as a former governor, is not required to be here and is probably glad that he doesn't have to watch his rival take the oath.
No doubt. It cannot be anything but a painful experience.
It must. Losing a presidential campaign has been described as just one of the worst things that can happen to someone. I remember it was Hubert Humphrey who said, "I always wanted to run for president in the worst way possible, and then I did."
Yeah. So he certainly knows what that painful experience is all about.
Yes.
I should mention that things have gone a little bit out of order. We were supposed to have the First Lady following the Biden family. She did come after the Biden family, but now this is Vice President Biden being announced onto the stage.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Vice President of the United States, Joseph R. Biden, accompanied by Inaugural Coordinator for the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Ceremonies, Kelly Fado, Senate Deputy Sergeant-at-Arms, Martina Bradford, House Deputy Sergeant-at-Arms, Carrie Hanley, Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid, and House Democratic Leader, Nancy Pelosi.
And there is the Vice President. You can hear the cheer that's gone up from the crowd. He has his hands at his side, now reaching out to shake some hands as he strides down the steps. A quick wave. dignitaries on the platform, all on their feet, turned away from the crowd on the mall to look up the steps as the vice president makes his way down.
And of course, some Democrats will be wondering if Joe Biden will be their nominee next time, or will it be the woman sitting pretty close to him, Hillary Clinton?
Right, the outgoing Secretary of State. Should mention that the president's cabinet, most of the president's cabinet is here in attendance as well, along with his chief of staff, who he has named to become a member of the cabinet. That would be Chief of Staff Jack Lew. He's in line to be Treasury Secretary if the Senate goes along with that. While we're waiting the president's arrival, let's talk a little bit more about the ticket issuing for today. Correspondent Jerry Bodlander recorded for us something earlier on about that, and how there is still very much a big party to be had, and this is a big ticket indeed. Here's correspondent Jerry Bodlander.
Mark, there are about 250,000 people who have tickets, and organizers have taken steps to try to avoid a repeat of what happened in 2009 when thousands of ticket holders couldn't get to their seats. The chairman of the Joint Congressional Committee that oversaw the preparations, New York Senator Charles Schumer, talked about steps that have been taken to make it easier for people who are attending today. For starters, the back of each ticket has important information.
Each ticket shows you which metro station you should use.
The ticket also says which security gate to use. While organizers have arranged for hundreds of volunteers to hand out flyers and provide directions, Schumer says for the first time, the inaugural committee is hosting a mobile app for smartphones.
Click on to your ticket color, and you'll get detailed instructions about how to get exactly to your seat.
And extra cell towers have been installed to handle the extra traffic. And Mark, we should add one other thing. It is clear from the choice of something as simple as the colors for each section that organizers wanted to completely forget what happened 4 years ago when, for a variety of reasons, thousands of people trying to get to their seats were stuck in the tunnel under the mall. So while there are six color-coded sections,
there are no purple tickets. And in fact, the purple ticket nightmare, which occurred because of the tunnel, the Third Street Tunnel, is closed.
Construction of the inaugural platform on the west front of the Capitol began 4 months ago, well before the election. The seats here on the Capitol grounds have been in place for about 2 weeks or so. The security barriers have slowly gone up in recent days, along with fences, speakers, and everything else for this inauguration that's now just minutes away. Mark?
That is correspondent Jerry Bodlander. And as he just finished speaking, President Obama has just been announced. There's been a trumpet fanfare, and he is now emerging onto the west front of the U.S. Capitol. Let's listen. President smiling, waving, shaking hands, acknowledging some of the cheers, doing plenty of greeting of lawmakers. He was escorted down the steps by a large sort of delegation, including the chairs of the inaugural committee. Charles Schumer of New York of the Senate and Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee. Now the president at the bottom of the steps, he shakes hands with the vice president, a hearty handshake. Again, that's the president's own Marine band playing in the background. The president is at the front. Schumer is now taking his place to the right. Schumer and Alexander are, if you will, the hosts of this ceremony. And very shortly, it is Schumer who will formally kick things off. Let's go back once again to talk to Jeremy Mayer of George Mason University. Jeremy, the there's some differences from last time around, but there's also, of course, this tremendous similarity of the president raising his hand, putting his hand on the other hand on the Bible, and repeating something that is specified in the Constitution.
It's part of the pageantry and the ceremony of American politics, and it also symbolizes the continuity. So I think this is an important day in Washington to remind Americans that we're all of one nationality, whatever party we belong to.
And certainly that's going to be a key theme in the president's inaugural address, despite what have been some fierce battles with Congress. Just watching the president come down the steps, House Speaker John Boehner was directly behind him. Obviously, those two have had some pretty tumultuous negotiation.
That's putting it mildly. You wonder if they were able to make any progress on the budget negotiations in the hallway.
Yeah, waiting to come out. One would probably not think that's the case, but you live in hope, I suppose.
I suppose.
The fiscal cliff that the two men just managed to avoid New Year's Day, well, that avoided automatic spending cuts, deep across-the-board spending cuts, and tax hikes. But still sort of mini cliffs lie out there in the next few weeks. The federal debt limit is likely to be reached in mid-February. We have those automatic spending cuts coming back at the end of February. And then at the end of March, you have the expiration of the budget authorizing a resolution that keeps Uncle Sam in funds, all the federal agencies going. So all those things have to be negotiated, starting with the debt ceiling, which is coming up very soon.
Indeed, and looming over all of this is the current unemployment situation. If Barack Obama in 2 years from now is still looking at unemployment this high, I think you have to judge his presidency a failure.
Righto. That was Professor Jeremy Mayer of the George Mason University. And now let's go to the podium and let's listen to Senator Charles Schumer of New York, who is the chair of the Presidential Inaugural Committee, and he is the host and master of ceremonies, and he'll be introducing the president.
An American president. And no matter how many times one witnesses this event, its simplicity, its innate majesty, and most of all its meaning, that sacred yet cautious entrusting of power from we the people to our chosen leader never fails to make one's heart beat faster, as it will today with the inauguration of President Barack H. Obama. Now, we know that we would not be here today were it not for those who stand guard around the world to preserve our freedom. To those in our armed forces, we offer our infinite thanks for your bravery, your honor, your sacrifice. This democracy of ours was forged by intellect and argument, by activism and blood, and above all, from John Adams to Elizabeth Cady Stanton to Martin Luther King, by a stubborn adherence to the notion that we are all created equal and that we deserve nothing less than a great republic worthy of our consent. The theme of this year's inaugural is faith in America's future. The perfect embodiment of this unshakable confidence in the ongoing success of our collective journey is an event from our past. I speak of the improbable completion of the Capitol Dome and capping it with the Statue of Freedom, which occurred 150 years ago in 1863. When Abraham Lincoln took office 2 years earlier, the dome above us was a half-built eyesore. Conventional wisdom was that it should be left unfinished until the war ended, given the travails and financial needs of the times. But to President Lincoln, the half-finished dome symbolized the half-divided nation. Lincoln said, "If people see the Capitol going on, it is a sign we intend the Union shall go on." And so, despite the conflict which engulfed the nation and surrounded the city, the dome continued to rise. On December 2nd, 1863, the Statue of Freedom, a woman, was placed atop the dome where she still stands today. In a sublime irony, it was a former slave, now free American, Philip Reed, who helped to cast the bronze statue. Now, our present times are not as perilous or as despairing as they were in 1863, but in 2013, far too many doubt the future of this great nation and our ability to tackle our own era's half-finished domes. Today's problems are intractable, they say. The times are so complex, the differences in the country and the world so deep, we will never overcome them. When thoughts like these produce anxiety, fear, and even despair, we do well to remember that Americans have always been, and still are, a practical, optimistic, problem-solving people. And that, as our history shows, no matter how steep the climb, how difficult the problems, how half-finished the task, America always rises to the occasion. America prevails and America prospers. And those who bet against this country have inevitably been on the wrong side of history. So, it is a good moment to gaze upward and behold the Statue of Freedom at the top of the Capitol Dome. It is a good moment to gain strength and courage and humility from those who were determined to complete the half-finished dome. It is a good moment to rejoice today at this 57th presidential inaugural ceremony, and it is the perfect moment to renew our collective faith in the future of America. Thank you, and God bless these United States.
That was Senator Charles Schumer of New York, who is the chairman of the
Commission. I would now like to introduce civil rights leader Merle Evers, who has committed her life to extending the promise of our nation's founding principles to all Americans. Mrs. Evers will lead us in the invocation.
Merle Evers Williams, former NAACP chair, and of course the wife of slain civil rights leader Medgar Evers. She's now striding to the podium with her invocation in hand.
America, we are here, our nation's capital, on this day, January the 21st, 2013, the inauguration of our 45th president, Barack Obama. We come at this time to ask blessings upon our leaders, the President, Vice President, members of Congress, all elected and appointed officials of the United States of America. We are here to ask blessings upon our armed forces, blessings upon all who contribute to the essence of the American spirit, the American dream. The opportunity to become whatever our mankind, womankind, allows us to be. This is the promise of America. As we sing the words of belief, "This is my country," let us act upon the meaning that everyone is included. May the inherent dignity and inalienable rights of every woman, man, boy, and girl be honored. May all your people, especially the least of these, flourish in our blessed nation. 150 years after the Emancipation Proclamation and 50 years after the March on Washington, we celebrate the spirit of our ancestors, which has allowed us to move from a nation of unborn hopes and a history of disenfranchised votes to today's expression of a more perfect union. We ask too, Almighty, that where our paths seem blanketed by thorns of oppression and riddled by pangs of despair, we ask for your guidance toward the light of deliverance, and that the vision of those who came before us and dreamed of this day, that we recognize that their visions still inspire us. They are a great cloud of witnesses, unseen by the naked eye, but all around us, thankful that their living was not in vain. For every mountain, you gave us the strength to climb. Your grace is pleaded to continue that climb for America and the world. We now stand beneath the shadow of the nation's capital, whose golden dome reflects the unity and democracy of one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Approximately 4 miles from where we are assembled, the hallowed remains of men and women rest in Arlington Cemetery. They who believed, fought, and died for this country. May their spirit infuse our being to work together with respect, enabling us to continue to build this nation. And in so doing, we send a message to the world that we are strong, fierce in our strength, and ever vigilant in our pursuit of freedom. We ask that you grant our president the will to act courageously but cautiously when confronted with danger, and to act prudently but deliberately when challenged by adversity. Please continue to bless his efforts to lead by example in consideration and favor of the diversity of our people. Bless our families all across this nation. We thank you for this opportunity of prayer to strengthen us for the journey through the days that lie ahead. We invoke the prayers of our grandmothers who taught us to pray, God, make me a blessing. Let their spirit guide us as we claim the spirit of old. There's something within me that holds the reins. There's something within me that banishes pain. There's something within me I cannot explain. But all I know, America, there is something within. There is something within. In Jesus' name, in the name of all who are holy and right, we pray. Amen.
That was Merle Evers Williams, wife of slain civil rights leader Medgar Evers, with the invocation there. Interestingly, the first non-member of the clergy ever to deliver an invocation at the inaugural ceremonies. Once again, this is Charles Schumer.
I am pleased to introduce the award-winning Tabernacle Choir, the Brooklyn Tabernacle Choir, to sing Battle Hymn of the Republic.
This is a 280-voice choir, primarily composed of untrained church members, Grammy Award-winning choir, under the direction of Carol Cimbala, the wife of the pastor. Brooklyn Tabernacle Choir, wearing red tunics, black gloves, and mufflers, and performing in front of the west front of the U.S. Capitol, a dramatic backdrop. President Obama on his feet now,
please,
with his gloves, applauding them. And now the co-chair, the Republican co-chair of the Presidential Inaugural Committee, Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee, reflecting, of course, the bipartisan nature of presidential swearings-in.
Mr. President, Mr. Vice President, ladies and gentlemen, the late Alex Haley, the author of Roots, lived his life by these six words: find the good and praise it. Today we praise the American tradition of transferring or reaffirming immense power in the inauguration of the President of the United States. We do this in a peaceful, orderly way. There is no mob, no coup, no insurrection. This is a moment when millions stop and watch, a moment most of us always will remember. It is a moment that is our most conspicuous and enduring symbol of the American democracy. How remarkable that this has survived for so long in such a complex country when so much power is at stake. This freedom to vote for our leaders and the restraint to respect the results. Last year at Mount Vernon, a tour guide told me that our first president, George Washington, once posed this question: what is most important, Washington asked, of this grand experiment, the United States? And then Washington answered his own question in this way: not the election of the first president, but the election of its second president. The peaceful transfer of power is what will separate our country from every other country in the world. So today we celebrate the 57th inauguration of the American president. Find the good and praise it. Now, it is my honor to introduce the Associate Justice of the Supreme Court, Sonia Sotomayor, for the purpose of administering the oath of office to the Vice President. Will everyone please stand?
Justice Sotomayor, wearing a black overcoat. She, of course, named by President Obama, the first of two Supreme Court justices named by him. Now Vice President Biden takes his place in front
Mr.
of her.
Mr. Vice President, please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Joseph R. Biden, Jr., do solemnly swear.
I, Joseph R. Biden, Jr., do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
The duties of the office on which I am about to enter.
The duties of the office upon which I am about to enter.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
You can hear the cheer that went up from the crowd that again stretches out across the National Mall. Vice President Biden now embracing his wife Jill, his son Beau, his other children as he is now stepping down off the highest rung of the rostrum. And now an embrace with President Obama, a hug and two men slapping each other on the back. It won't be long now before President Obama has his turn taking the oath of office. But first, a musical interlude. Once again, this is Senator Charles Schumer of New York.
To introduce renowned musical artist James Taylor.
The Bard of Martha's Vineyard has sold more than 100 million records, multiple Grammy winner. He is now stepping on stage and is being handed his guitar. He is not wearing an overcoat, just a sweater. James Taylor singing America the Beautiful. Beautifully indeed. He, of course, campaigned extensively for President Obama during the re-election bid. He gets a hug from the president, a slap on the back, as James Taylor now steps off
stage. It is my honor to present the Chief Justice of the United States, John G. Roberts, Jr., who will administer the presidential oath of office. Everyone, please rise.
The moment is at hand. The president steps on to the rostrum, his wife stepping up next to him and two daughters. He'll be using two Bibles today, one Martin Luther King's traveling Bible.
Please raise your right hand
and repeat
after me.
Abraham Lincoln's Bible.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability.
And will, to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President. Well done.
The band plays Ruffles and Flourishes and Hail to the Chief. The president, newly sworn in for his second term, waves to the crowd. A huge handshake with Vice President Biden. A backslap between the two. The president's family standing directly behind him as he drinks in this moment, the commencement of a second term as President of the United States. Be interested to know that during that reading of the oath, Chief Justice Roberts read every word of the oath from cue cards to make sure he got it right, as he did not 4 years ago. And as the guns echo away across the National Mall, Senator Charles Schumer again steps up to the podium to introduce
Ladies
the president for his inaugural address.
It is my great privilege and distinct honor to introduce the 44th President of the United States of America, Barack H. Obama.
And that brings perhaps the biggest cheer of the morning. It is still morning, just approaching noon here in Washington, D.C., as the president steps to the podium. He opens up the binder where he has the printed copy of this address, waves to the crowd, and now is ready to begin.
Thank you.
The president waiting as the crowd begins to chant Obama.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Vice President Biden, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the United States Congress, distinguished guests, and fellow citizens. Each time we gather to inaugurate a president, we bear witness to the enduring strength of our Constitution. We affirm the promise of our democracy. We recall that what binds this nation together is not the colors of our skin,